Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Nate Sense. I am from Restore Hope, which is a charity based down at Latimer Park, which is only about 15 minutes away from where we're sitting right now. And I'll come back and tell you a bit more about that in a second. If you want to go to the first slide, this is me. That's not me. That's me. There we go. This is me with my wife and my three kids. We have twin boys who are 14 years old and a little girl who we adopted 6 years ago who's now coming up to 10. And this to me is a really magical photo. This is a magical moment. We spent a couple of weeks touring around Europe and we ended up in south of Italy this past summer. And this picture is at the top of Mount Vesuvius. So we went and walked around Pompeii. And if you've ever been to Pompeii, it's wide open. It is hot in the summer, and you have to do a lot of walking. And so then, after marching the kids around Pompeii, I told them, now we're going to climb up that great big mountain right there. So they were already frowning. And then by the time they got to the mountain, they were frowning. So it's quite magical that they're all smiling in this one photo. It's probably the only 30 seconds of the entire day where they were smiling. And that's my wife, Caroline, who also works at Restore Hope. Next slide. Right at the start of today, I just wanted to share with you a picture that someone sent to me this week. It's a meme, so you can go to the next one. And if you can see it clearly, it's several guys sitting in a boat. The ocean is a bit rocky, and one of the guys is standing up, and he's pointing at a man in the distance, and he's saying, "Excuse me, Jesus, you're in the way. You're in the way. Could you scoot over?" And of course, Jesus looks back and says, "Excuse you? I am the way." So that really touched my heart this week, especially as the message was coming to me about what I wanted to share this morning. It's quite easy for us to be the guys in the boat and saying to Jesus, "Listen, I'm just trying to get over there. Could you just move to the side? I need to get to that place just on the other side of you." And of course, Jesus is always there saying, wait a minute. You have forgotten one really important thing here. I am the way. Next slide. And so about Restore Hope. We are a charity working with children, families, young people on a farm. Our farm is down in the Chess Valley, which is between sort of Little Chalfont and Latimer, Cheney's and Chesham. So it's sort of in this little pocket of the Chiltern Hills, which is stunning. Who's been down to Latimer Park before? Yeah, so you can vouch for it. It is a stunning piece of property right there in the heart of the Chiltern Hills on the border of Buckinghamshire and Hertfordshire. If you push play on the next one, then I'm told this is going to take about a minute and a half before the video starts. So I'll just keep talking. Oh, look at that. There it goes. All right, here we go. Listen about a project that we're about to start.
Restore Hope has been based here at Latimer Park, set in the Chess Valley on 360 acres of stunning countryside in the Chilterns. Whilst our Latimer Park estate is ideal for running our outdoor and large-scale family events and feasts, our biggest challenge is access, because there is no public transportation to the site. We believe many of our courses and groups would be much better suited in a more urban setting. Therefore, earlier this year, we purchased the former St. John's Methodist Church on Woodside Road in Amersham to develop it into a state-of-the-art community hub, bringing much of the work we do right into the heart of the community. The site currently has a central courtyard surrounded by three large meeting rooms and several smaller breakout spaces. Our intention is to enclose that courtyard to create a heart to the campus, a warm place where people can gather before heading off to other parts of the building for their activities. Our recent consultation process highlighted four main areas of need: youth provision, mental health and well-being, family support, and advice and guidance. Our intention is to serve each of these needs by bridging the gap between an assessment and a diagnosis, offering life skills training, and supporting people on the pathway to employment. Through clever architecture and design, we can segment the whole campus to provide space for various groups simultaneously. We could accommodate a dementia carers cafe and an early years intervention program at the same time as family counseling and budgeting advice. It is an exciting time to be planning all that might take place at Restore Hope Amersham, and we're going to need all the help we can get. We expect to have our planning approved by late summer 2024, aiming to open our doors by September 2025. A huge part of this project will be gathering together partners, funders, and like-minded organizations. And this is where we need you. We need to raise around £3 million for the building works, while also increasing our annual expenditure to around £1.3 million. This doubles our current annual budget, but will quadruple our impact. This is a big vision, but so was Latimer Park 22 years ago, and now by bringing them both together, we will see even more lives transformed and hope for our community restored.
So that's where we're going. I'm not here this morning asking for £3 million. I'm here to ask for your prayers. We do need the money to be able to put that building together to make a place where the community can gather together in a safe place in Amersham. So we'd really value your prayers. The other thing that you could do is, as you heard in the video, is our planning permission is very close to being determined. We've probably got about 2 weeks left. In front of you on the tables is a card that looks like this. On the back of it are some little QR codes. You could go to the webpage, and you could that links you through to our planning permission, and you could go in and put a comment if you wanted to, a comment of support. That would be really helpful for the council to see how important this building is going to be. Also in front of you, I've left another card. One thing, if you do know about Restore Hope in this community and you don't know what we do as a charity, you know that we do a big fireworks night every year. The other card is an invitation for you to join us for the fireworks night and our Nativity Light Trail, which is happening at the beginning of December. That's our harvest field. That's where we're headed. You can go ahead to the next. Great. Our current harvest field is this charity space down here. Restore Hope. We have 360 acres. You saw in the video, gardens, meadows, lakes, rivers, barns, buildings, and of course arable farmland as well. Next slide. And of all of that, 360 acres, 120 are arable farmland. That is a vast field. That is a vast harvest field. And to do the work on that, I've got three guys. Three members of my estate team to take care of 120 acres. So in that second reading from Matthew that you heard, where Jesus is saying to his disciples, the harvest is plenty, but the workers are few, that really means something to me. Every day when I go to work, I look up and I see that. I see the harvest is plenty and the workers are few. So this morning, I wanted to share with you a little bit about what that means to me. And certainly what those two readings mean to me to do with harvest. So go ahead to the next slide. You heard about the feeding the 5,000. We heard that story. In fact, we probably know that story deep down. And as a child, we will have all heard that story all through growing up, right? And this is probably something similar to what we would have seen in our picture Bible or in images that the Sunday school teacher might have put up on the wall, feeding the 5,000. That only has about 24 people in the picture. 24 people. And so in my mind growing up, I would have always thought, right, feeding the 5,000, is that really a big deal? Is that a lot of people? And so if you go to the next slide, this is what 5,000 people actually looks like, right? 5,000 people standing on that grassy field coming to see this man, Jesus, talk. My feeling is, as Jesus was standing there on the grassy hill, looking out at the vast number of people and seeing this little boy come up with the fish and the bread, he probably, and if this is very cinematic, but he probably turned to the camera at that moment and he said, "I bet you're wondering how we got here. I bet you're wondering how we got here. How did we get to this place that I have 5,000 people? I have a massive harvest. And I've got just a handful of disciples here behind me and one little boy who's just brought his lunch today. How have we got to this place?" And that's where it goes back to that other verse that we read from Matthew 9. And so what I thought I would do is just share with you a little bit about what happens in Matthew 9, leading up to that moment when Jesus says, "The harvest is plenty, but the workers are few." In Matthew 9, Jesus is traveling on a boat. He's traveling on a boat at the start of the chapter across the lake to a village. The water's a bit rocky. The guys, the disciples, are all in the boat with him, and they're rowing him across to get to this village. The boat pulls up, and he gets off the boat, and now he's standing in the village. And people are standing around looking at him, wondering who this man is. What does he have to bring to us? Now, if it was me, and I've been on a few boats in my day, if it was me, I'm already tired getting off that boat. We've come across a lake, the water has been a bit rocky, and I'm already feeling sore, I'm already feeling a bit tired. That's just me. But what did Jesus do? He stepped off the boat, and the people brought someone to him. They brought him a man who was laying on a mat. And Jesus, the first thing he did is he said, "Son, I forgive you your sins," to the man laying on the mat. All of the leaders and the teachers of the village looked at him and said, "Jesus, what are you doing? That's blasphemy. He's laying here, he can't walk, and you're saying to him, you forgive him his sins?" And Jesus said, "What's more important? What's more important for the Son of Man, to forgive him his sins or to heal him? But because you have raised it, I'm going to also heal him to prove that my authority exists in the first part. I'm going to prove to you that he can get up and walk, and therefore I have forgiven his sins." So he did that. So the paralyzed man stood up and walked. He debated with the teachers about that. Next thing he did, he went and had dinner with Matthew. He was looking around the crowds, and he saw a table over here. Not very many people going over to this table, because Matthew was the tax collector. He was the one with the black heart. Jesus made a beeline for him and said, "I'm eating with you today." Again, all of the teachers and the leaders stood up and said, "What are you doing, Jesus? That's the last man you want to go be with. You want to come be with us? We have clean hearts. We're holy. He's the tax collector. Nobody wants to have lunch with him." And Jesus said no. So Jesus went and redeemed Matthew in that moment. Again, he debated with the teachers and the leaders. As he was leaving that place, a leader of the local synagogue came running up. "Jesus, Jesus, my daughter is sick. She's not well. Please, can you come to my house? Can you have a look at her?" So people are starting to take notice of this man who's different. This man who is unique to what they've experienced in their lives. So the synagogue leader came running up. "Jesus, please come to my house." So Jesus, of course, he said, "Of course I will." So he made his way through the crowds. As he was going through the crowds, someone touched his cloak. Again, we've all heard this story. The woman reached up and touched his cloak, and he turned around and he said, "Yes, I have time for you. You are healed. Because you have had faith, you've had enough faith just to reach out and touch my cloak, you are healed." And she was healed of her affliction, which was 12 years worth of bleeding. And she was healed even in that moment. As Jesus was heading to the synagogue leader's house, he still had time for the woman. By the time he got close to the house, the death drums were playing, right? The people were wailing inside the house. And Jesus comes walking in and says, "Show me where this young girl is." And they say, "But Jesus, it's too late. You've missed it. She's dead." Jesus said, "No, she's not. She's just asleep. Show me the woman." So they walked her through the house, and he went in, and he raised her from the dead. All throughout this, he was being mocked and belittled on one side. On the other side, people were starting to take notice. People were starting to recognize this man and what he was bringing to them. He healed two blind men in a building. He delivered a mute man from darkness, who was then also able to talk. It says in Matthew 9, Jesus then traveled extensively teaching and sharing the good news, relieving people of all kinds of sicknesses and diseases. I'm tired just reading that list. I was tired getting off the boat. And I know when I get tired, I get a bit grumpy. I get a bit cranky. At the end of my workday, if I've done some really good things throughout my workday, say I went out onto my estate and one of my estate members was having an issue with a tractor and I just told him what to do. I wouldn't be able to tell him what to do. But let's just pretend that I told him, "You just need to get the wrench. You need to turn that crank right there and the tractor's going to start to work again." I went into my office and my fundraiser said, "Nate, we've got a really difficult conversation to have with this potential funder. Could you do it? Pick up the phone and just nail it." I give them all the right answers that they need. Perhaps somebody in my office is having a little bit of a complication with some HR issue, and I step right in and I solve that one. I have been nailing it all day long, getting everything right, doing everything perfect. By the end of that day, I am tired. I just go home and I want to read a book, have some food, and get in bed because I am grumpy now. I am tired. So after I've read this whole list of what Jesus had been doing, right, Wouldn't surprise me if he was tired. He's been working hard. This is a very short amount of time. He's been working hard. Wouldn't surprise me if he's tired. And we'd forgive him if he was grumpy and cranky, but he wasn't. What does it say he was? It says, and after all of that, he still had compassion for the crowds. He still had compassion for the crowds. So then we get to this one part in the verse. He turns around at this point, and this would be me as well. Guys, you've been following me. You were on the boat with me. You've been following me through all of this. Do you not see? The harvest is plenty, and the workers are few. I'm the only one doing this, guys. And that's when he said, pray to the Lord of the harvest. Pray to the Lord of the harvest, and he will send more workers into the harvest field. So what should we do for a harvest? Five quick things from me, and this is what it says in that chapter in Matthew 9. The first thing is, Jesus understood the land. He understood the landscape. He recognized the crowds. It says he saw the crowds. So he stepped off the boat, he looked up, and he saw what was going on. So I would encourage you, step out of this building, step out of your house, and just see what's going on. Look at the crowds. Go for a walk on a Friday night and just listen. Just listen to what's going on up and down the roads. The next thing he did was he showed compassion. To show compassion, you need to understand need. So I would encourage you to research the need. Look around you. If you've seen the crowds, if you've listened, if you've paid attention in the shops, then you're going to see that there's some people in need. You're going to see that there's some opportunities for you to show compassion. The next thing that he did was he talked about, there was that bit in the verse that he talked about the sheep being helpless and harassed, right? So he's saying, be a shepherd. What do shepherds need? They need tools. If a little sheep, if one of his little lambs is helpless and is lost, he takes his tool, his hook, and he gathers the sheep back in and says, come back over here. Get back into the safe space. If the sheep is being harassed, he uses that same tool and he bats away, protecting his sheep. So he's using his tools as a shepherd. So you've recognized the crowds, you've showed compassion, and now you've got your tools. And the best tools that you have are already right here. All you need to do is listen. All you have to do is sit back and listen. That's all people need. Once you've listened, then you can make your next best choice, which is to talk, to share with them, and then to give them things, whatever that might be. Right? These are the tools that you already have. The next thing Jesus did was he said, gather your team. This is where he said, pray and ask the Lord. Gather your team. So gather together as a church, in your house groups, in your community groups. Gather together within your family. Gather together within your workplace. Gather your team and pray to the Lord of the harvest. Send us. Send us into that harvest field. And that's what happened next. As Jesus said to the disciples, now I want you to go. Now I want you to go. Now it's your turn. So be brave and courageous. Now, I think I just need to make one thing clear. For me personally, I don't think Jesus is judging the quantity or the quality of the workers in this statement. I think it's easy for us to look around and say, yeah, you know what? We are few. There's not enough of us. Nobody wants to come to church anymore. There's not enough of us to get out there. That would be really easy for us to become quite sour and dour about this. And I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. I think what he's actually saying is he's highlighting the vastness of the harvest. And top tip, the workers are in the harvest. So as you go out and as you start to gather in your harvest, you'll find that what you're actually gathering in is more workers because the harvest will grow exponentially beyond that. So my question for you this morning is, where is your harvest? Where is your harvest? Is it at work? Is it at school? Is it within your family, in your community? I'll give you two quick examples. One of my employees is going through a really tough time right now. He's going through a real challenging time. And I know he has a pretty hard job. And I know the rhythm of his job weekly as well. I know sort of when he has to be doing things that he doesn't particularly enjoy. I know exactly when that is in his week. And so what do? I just make sure to catch up with him about 30 minutes before he has to go and do that task. I walk by his desk. I give him just a little bit of encouragement. Buddy, you're doing a great job. I'm so proud of you. I love the way I saw you working last week with this person. I loved seeing how much joy that brought you last week. You're going to do it today. Go for it. Just a little bit of encouragement. That's one of my harvests, is giving him that little bit of a nudge so that he can get through whatever that difficult bit of his week is going to be. Another example, within my family, my wife's cousin, who only lives local to us, has been going through a really aggressive cancer over the past 6 months. It's been really eating at her, quite literally eating at her this week. And her family, they're not Christians per se. They go to church for weddings, and they might go on Easter, that sort of thing, but they're not at church often. And so we've looked at that and said, you know what, that's actually our harvest as well. We can show Christ's love to that family, to her and specifically. We can show Christ's love by just dropping off a meal, sending encouraging texts, offering to take the dog for a walk. At some point, she's going to get through this, and she will get through this. And she and her family will look back and say, wow, we really needed that. That was kind. That was generous. We needed that. We're looking at that as a family, as one of our harvests. So in those examples, I've only talked about two people. Have I talked about 5,000 people? No. Two people is my harvest right now. So where is your harvest? Don't you just take just a quick second and think through. Maybe put somebody in your mind. Who's somebody that might be your harvest right now? Think about who that person is. And then I want you to think, what is your next best step? What's the one thing that you need to do, that you need to commit in your mind to that person at some point this week? Is it someone at work? Is it someone in your school? Is it someone in your community? Is it someone in your family? What is your next best step? And now I bet almost immediately as I asked you to do that, you came up with three good reasons why you shouldn't do that. Oh, I can't help that person at work. I can't offer them support because they're a bit of a bully and they're going to take advantage of me. They're going to take advantage of my kindness. No, I'm not going to do that. I can't help that person in my family because they just think that I've just been preaching at them for the past 20 years, and they're just going to see this as another thing, and just pushing them away from ever getting an opportunity to come to know Christ. So I can't share with my family. What's the thing that's in your way that came to your mind when you thought of that harvest? I would encourage you to think back to the beginning of this talk. What's in your way? Jesus is the way. That's why you need to pray to the Lord of the harvest. That's why you need to look at Jesus. He will gather alongside you. He will be behind you. He will go in front of you. And most importantly, he will be inside of you. And remember, you've got the tools right here. You've got the tools right here. So Jesus looks back from the camera and he says, right, now you know how we got here. It all started with me just walking through a village and a few people coming up to me, touching my cloak, me going to someone's house, me sharing with the tax collector. Now you know why we got here. Now you know why there's 5,000 hungry people here who have followed me. So spoiler alert, what happened next? Jesus called the 12 disciples and he equipped them. He said, you now have the power to drive out evil and to heal every kind of sickness and disease across Israel. Go. Go. He sent the disciples in that moment. And what does that do? That little bit foreshadows us sitting right here today talking about harvest. That little bit foreshadows right at the end of Matthew. In fact, the very last bit of Matthew, Matthew 28, where we've had Easter, Jesus has died, he's risen again, and now he's sitting around with his disciples and he's sharing with them. And what does he say to them in that moment? He says, now go, not just to Israel, but go to the ends of the earth and share the gospel. Minister to the needy around the world. I was needy once. I needed somebody to minister to me. I was the harvest. We all needed truth at some point in our lives. We needed to hear the gospel. We were the harvest. So as you start to think about who your harvest could possibly be and your next best step, and you help ask Jesus to push the things out of the way that are stopping you from that, you can consider that that is now your harvest. And so I would just leave you with this one thought. When God calls you, he will equip you, and then he will send you, and therefore you shall go. You shall go into the harvest field. Have the band come back up, please. Father God, thank you so much for this morning. Thank you for bringing us together to this space. Thank you for all of this amazing food and life needs that you've put onto this stage up here that will be shared so willingly with the needy in our community. Thank you for laying on us a spirit of harvest. Thank you for helping us to recognize in our own lives where we have been so blessed to be in the harvest and a worker came and gathered us in. And therefore, our responsibility within that great commission, Lord, to go back in to the harvest field. Call us. Your servants are listening. We will go. In your name I pray. Amen.